Hello, I am joined by the YouTuber Critical Drinker, and today we're going to talk about the classic 1970 film Waterloo, and it's certainly one of my favourite historical films of all time. And Drinker, it's one of yours, I take it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think in terms of like sheer spectacle and the amount of work that went into this production, like it doesn't get much more epic than Waterloo. It's just a fantastic movie and really well acted. Like, you know, you've got Christopher Plummer, you've got Rod Steiger, like brilliant actors of their generation. So it's a real pleasure to watch this movie.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's maybe a bit obvious, but this film does, I think, revolve a lot around the two lead performances, and they're both superb. Yeah, well, in my opinion, in most people's opinion. I think Rod Steiger does actually look a bit like a late stage Napoleon. I don't think Christopher Plummer looks particularly like Wellington, but I think Napoleon, he actually looks like him as well, which is always a bonus, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, he's I think by that point in his career, Napoleon had put on a bit of weight, you know, and he was losing his hair and stuff, and he was very ill by that point. So, like, he really embodies that. Like, I think he's got that great look about him.
Yeah, he wasn't a young man by that point, because people might think of seeing sort of the young, very hard-nosed, thin Napoleon, and then there's the sort of late stage where he's sort of quite getting a bit obese, and sort of by the very end, Waterloo days. But some of my favourite historical films, I don't know if you know, I love Lawrence of Arabia, I love A Lion in Winter. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's one of my favourites, but certainly Waterloo is just superb. And one of the things, I suppose, we will talk about in detail with the takeaways, that it's sort of pre-CGI, isn't it?
Yes. So apparently this was filmed in the Soviet Union back in 1970, and the Soviet government leased about 15,000-20,000 Soviet soldiers to be extras in this. And so where else are you going to get that many extras on screen at one time? I don't know if they were volunteered for it or if they were just told that's what you got to do, but I'm sure they had fun. And so they apparently, like, they landscaped an entire area of Ukraine, I think, where they filmed it. They bulldozed hills, they planted forests and stuff so they can make it look like the battlefield at Waterloo as it did on the day. Just an incredible amount of work that you wouldn't get nowadays. It would have been mostly CGI'd, which is such a shame.
Yeah, I think, an incredible amount of work went into it. Because there's a few sort of famous films in history, like Cleopatra, I think, is known, isn't it, as having just loads and loads of real-life extras.
Yes.
But I think this one, I think Waterloo is, if anything, sort of the example par excellence. I think it's got the record for the most extras ever used. And some of the clips we'll see, sort of, you know, you can see it with your own eyes. And, I think they were sort of Ukrainian troops. So, I don't know if the option was either appear in this production or it's the gulag. I don't know if it was quite as stark as that, but
I mean, compared to what they normally had to do, I suppose this was a nice chance to just lark about for a few months, you know,
right? Yeah,
firing muskets and stuff and just marching back and forward. That would have been good fun.
Yeah, that would have been so much more fun just to dress up and and get some direction from a director rather than sort of a bloodthirsty general. So I can imagine it was actually more fun than normal. But I suppose then jumping straight into the film, because it's one of those, I don't know if you agree with me, that it's one of those films you used to get in the 50s and 60s and 70s that they don't really do so much anymore, where it's that most of the film is the battle, really, and it jumps sort of straight into it. It gives the audience a fair bit of credit. It sort of assumes you know a bit about Napoleon and the Napoleonic era, and it just sort of jumps straight in. What do you feel about that? Do you think I've got that right? And do you like that in a film or no?
Pretty much. I always prefer films that credit their audience with a bit of intelligence rather than pretending you're an absolute dummy and having to spell everything out to you, because, you know, for most people, it's just really insulting. And so, yeah, it definitely helps to have a bit of background knowledge of the Napoleonic Wars. And I think when this film picks up, it's in the last days of Napoleon's rule before he's forced to abdicate. He's lost a string of battles. His enemies are closing in on all sides and his marshals are basically quitting on him. And you can see, even from his first appearance, he's not a well man. You know, he's pale, he's sweating, he's clearly got something wrong with him. And, you know, as you find out from real history, you know, he was actually dying of stomach cancer when all this was going on. He was in the early stages of that. So he's having a tough time of it. And so that's when you get that initial abdication. He's forced to give up the throne of France and go into exile for a while. And then the movie kind of really gets going when he comes back from his exile and he takes up the throne again and fights his final battle at Waterloo.
Yeah. If some people don't know, just a very quick whirlwind tour. Napoleon has a very long and amazing career, about 15 years long. He's eventually defeated after the biggest defeat he has at Leipzig. Is completely defeated and is sent to prison on the island of Elba, which is in the Mediterranean, from which he escapes for 100 days. So it's like one of the all-time amazing comebacks, sort of out of nowhere. Napoleon, he's like, has this extra episode to his story, which is incredible. But he then loses that at Waterloo. I don't think I'm ruining it for anyone, yeah. Spoiling it, that Napoleon loses at Waterloo.
We've all heard the ABBA song, so it's fine.
Right. But so Napoleon has this sort of this comeback sort of out of nowhere. And anyway, this film starts with him having to abdicate the first time, and all his generals, you know, all the most famous ones like Ney and Saul come to him and say, you must abdicate. You know, they say to him, the Austrians are in Versailles. The Cossacks are watering their horses in the Seine. That's the river that runs through Paris. You know, they can hear the Prussian cannon in Montmartre. In other words, Paris has fallen. We've lost. You must abdicate. Which, you know, you can only imagine a figure like Napoleon wouldn't want to do it at any costs. I wonder if we could play the first clip, John, if you could just whack that up real quick, if that's all right with you, Drinker. Got a few clips going.
What can I do? What? I sent to the Emperor of Russia for peace. He refused me. What can we do? What can we do? What can we do?
We can fight! Fight! I fortify Paris. I disengage from Austria. I find a line of retreat to Italy. And above all, we must consolidate, consolidate, mobilize, mobilize, train the recruits on the march!
There are no more men to mobilize.
The army doesn't want the same thing to happen to Paris as happened to Moscow.
Wellington. Wellington. Why is it always Wellington? Wellington, 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 Wellington. Why are you all so afraid of Wellington? Is it because he beat you in Spain? Is that why?
France will not follow you.
France will follow me to the stars if I give her another victory.
You have no choice. You have to give up the throne.
Oh, nay. The throne? Do you know what the throne is, nay? The throne is an over-decorated piece of furniture. It's what's behind the throne that counts. My brains, my ambitions, my desires, my hope, my imagination, and above all, my will. I can't believe my ears.
You all stand before me waving a piece of paper, crying, abdicate, abdicate. I will not! I will not! Not! Not!
So, well, don't you think that paints a really great picture of Napoleon, the man? Like you say, you see him, he's already sort of old, bit defeated, probably quite ill, actually. And you see him there and he's sort of very quiet or reserved until that explosion of energy and emotion. I think that encapsulate the character quite well. What do you think?
It's a great performance by Rod Steiger, and it really you can see this is a man on the brink. And so initially he's exhausted, he's like, what more can we do here? And then he gets this sudden burst of manic energy where he's making plans with armies that don't exist anymore, and he's just very much living in a fantasy world, just trying to convince himself that there's still a way to win. And then, you know, that's when he's again told, no, this isn't going to work. You can't keep doing this. And I just love that final explosive defiance from him, you know, screaming that he's not going to abdicate. It's kind of like a child having a tantrum. But, you know, this is the combination of brilliance and instability that you had in Napoleon at this point in his life. Mm. Really interesting performance.
Yeah, and a really good, I think, a very well-written screenplay, because I don't know, actually, if we have, well, I don't think we do, have transcripts of what Napoleon said in exactly in that period of real history. So it's up to the screenwriter to sort of decide how he would react, you know, what flights of emotion he might have had and obviously what words he would have used. And I can only imagine that that's sort of very well done there. It seems right. Seems to sort of depict his character quite well.
Yeah, and there's an interesting thing that Napoleon does throughout this movie where he repeats himself. He'll say a specific word and he'll say it again, like Wellington, Wellington, or, you know, we have to mobilize, 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 you know, all of these things. Like, it's just little idiosyncrasies of him. And I have no idea if the real Napoleon did that, but again, it speaks to the kind of restless mind that he has. He's always thinking of the next plan, the next scheme. I just think that's a really interesting little aspect to his character.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.